Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, Episode 1 for August 9th, 2006, WWDC Aftermath. This week on MacBreak Weekly, David Pogue of the New York Times, Command Ends Amber MacArthur, from Macworld Magazine, Chris Breen, from the Pixel Corps, Alex Lindsay, and I'm your host, Leo Laporte. Here we are sitting around a table, well, not really, a virtual table, the Skype round table, to talk a little bit about Macintosh. Maybe let me introduce everybody, and then, Alex, I want you to explain why MacBreak Weekly. So let's start off with Amber MacIntosh, who is, of course, perfectly named for this show, Amber MacArthur. Hey, Amber.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
She's calling from Toronto, and she's, of course, my co-host on Call for Help and the host of Torrent on G4 Tech TV Canada, and hosts her own podcast, Command N, the video podcast, with Michael Azazara out of Toronto, and many other things. Chris Breen is also here. He is the Mac Daddy from Macworld Magazine, does the Mac 911 column, wrote the best-selling book on iPods. Was it called iPod Secrets?
Secrets of the iPod, and also there's the iPod and iTunes Pocket Guide.
Yes, which I keep, actually have in my pocket.
Really?
Right now, yeah.
It'll stop a bullet, too, so put it in your breast pocket.
I've been sitting on you all day, actually. David Pogue, I'm so glad to have you. David, of course, is a Mac guy going way back, the great New York Times columnist and reviewer. You have to review Windows products, I know, in your column in the New York Times, but I know where your heart lies, David.
Don't tell anyone.
I know where it's buried. And actually, I just downloaded or bought a copy of Dragon Naturally Speaking because of your rave review of it. But more to the point, because you said you could run it in Parallels on a Macintosh.
Indeed.
I wasn't willing to do it on a Windows machine. But now that I know I can do it on the Mac, I'm happy. And of course, Alex Lindsay, who is, along with Amber, one of the co-hosts of MacBreak, the video show. Really, the reason we thought we'd start this week is because of WWDC. Chris, I think you might have been the only person actually at the keynote. Were you there?
Yeah, I was there. I was in sort of the off to the side press seats, you know, so I wasn't close enough for Steve to sweat on me, but still, I got the general tenor of the thing.
Was Steve sweating, or was he his usual relaxed self?
He was pretty relaxed, and also, unlike a lot of past keynotes, he shared the stage with a lot of the Apple guys. Normally, people expect Steve to hold down the stage, and then they bring in like the special guest from Intel or the Microsoft Business Unit or something.
Right.
This time, Steve had a lot of Apple people. Phil made an appearance, and
Phil's been making appearances a lot lately.
Yeah, well, he's sort of the Hardy to Steve's Laurel, or the other way around. I'm not sure what it, but when they team up, they do bits, and Phil's always good for a bit.
No one ever talks about Phil Schiller. You know, everyone talks about the cult of Steve and the personality of Steve, but Phil Schiller is a really cool guy. You know, like if you interview him, he'll give you honest answers, and he'll acknowledge flaws, and you know, he's a really cool guy.
What's his title?
He's the director of worldwide marketing, or possibly the worldwide director of marketing.
But he's a marketing guy, isn't he, David?
Well, he is a marketing guy, and that's what's so shocking about the fact that he'll be straight with you. I mean, you know, he colors everything a little bit, but in general, he'll be straight with you.
So did you watch, Amber, did you watch the keynote on the video?
Yeah, I've seen some of the video clips on the web, and I've been reading up on Leopard, and I'm pretty excited about Leopard. I know some people are saying, well, there's not that many new features, but I'm excited about Spaces, some of the new features in iChat as well, because I've been using iChat a lot more, especially with you, Leo.
Yeah, we like iChat.
Our
yeah.
new MacBooks.
Yeah.
It finally makes sense not to carry around our iSight cameras. So it seems like there's some great features just in Leopard and some of the stuff that has come out, including Time Machine and a few other things as well.
So there were two big announcements. Leopard wasn't a surprise announcement. We knew we'd talk about that, and of course, then the new hardware. Let's deal with Leopard first, since you brought it up, Amber. Any surprises?
I wasn't surprised about anything that came up in Leopard. I don't think there was anything that was kind of, you know, oh wow, this is so amazing and revolutionary. To me, it's more just like some, you know, basic improvements on the operating system and some things that are kind of neat and sort of the cool factor, really.
Yeah. How about you, David? I mean, you're the one who has to write the missing manual for this sucker.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to disagree. I think with each release, they try to come up with one blockbuster feature that you just have to get, you know, like Spotlight, something that will change your entire existence with the computer.
So before you say what you think that feature is, I'd like everybody to guess.
Yeah, I know. I'm really curious.
I'm going to guess the virtual desktops. Alex?
I'm guessing.
Chris?
I'm guessing Time Machine.
Time Machine. The Time Machine's kind of neat. Okay.
I'm guessing.
It is.
Hold on.
Time Machine.
Alex says Time Machine. Amber, do you want to make a guess?
Yeah, I would have to say the virtual desktop just because I think that's probably the most interesting of all.
I want to point out both of these features have been available. Well, Time Machine is actually a Windows thing, and Go Back's been around for a long time. And virtual desktops have been available on every platform, including Macintosh.
But dudes, you can't go doing that. That happens every time with every feature. There is nothing new under the sun. And every time Apple does something cool, they'll say, yeah, but Confabulator, da-da-da-da. Yeah, but in Linux, they had this. Dudes, it doesn't count if it's a third-party shareware, know about it and install it and troubleshoot a thing.
What do you think is the one feature that it blows you away?
I think it's Time Machine.
Time Machine.
4% of us right now have an automated, invisible, up-to-date, at this second backup system.
Right.
Do you, Leo?
I do.
Okay, so you're one of the 4%.
Which means none of you do.
No.
My backup is every Sunday. I drag my home folder onto an external drive.
I spend a lot of money to have a network attached storage device that does this automatically. And I use Super Duper in the background, and of course Super Duper,
third party shareware. Yeah. You know,
I have to say though, and a number of people made this point that once again, if I think Dan Carilia made it more kind of feistily than anybody else, once again Apple has raided the shareware community and kind of taken some of the best ideas and for its own. And Dan, of course, guided Sherlock or Watson, which became Sherlock, and then he did a web application just before iWeb came out. He didn't do anything this time. So to me, I mean, I think Apple might be slapping the shareware community around a little bit.
Yeah, but here again, that's what everybody says, but Microsoft does it, and Microsoft steals from Apple, and everybody's upset, and Apple steals from Microsoft, and then Linux steals from Microsoft. I mean, look, they're just these ideas. It's about the implementation.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. It's about building it in and saving thousands and thousands of people from losing everything when their hard drive dies or when somebody deletes the wrong thing. I mean, all of these people are now going to be covered automatically and without thinking. That is an enormous change.
Tell us what Time Machine does.
Well, it's an automatic invisible backup system, and it has something in common with System Restore on Windows, which is that if something goes wrong with your Mac, you can rewind it to when it was working well, or an individual document or an individual window. In the Finder, you can, and it's a really cool, like, time travel visual interface where you rewind to a certain date, and that document is now in the condition it was on June 3rd. Or that window where you could have sworn you filed the precious flank steak recipe is now restored with that document again.
So this is kind of more like Go Back than System Restore, because Go Back did data too. System Restore does not do data.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. If it doesn't eat up a lot of resources, slow the machine down, if it really works.
Well, it needs an external hard drive, but you know what? People should have a second hard drive.
That's true. So that's how it works. It automatically does it to an external hard drive.
Sorry, not external, just a second one.
Second. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so it doesn't do it to a partition and... You know, so the difficulty there, I think, is I'm thinking of my mother as fondly, and there, I mean, is my mother going to go out and buy an external hard drive? Well, I'll buy one for her and tell her how to do this.
Well,
but
David,
I do think
says she should.
Well, no, she should. Absolutely right.
But you know, I think who it bothers me is what about laptop users? We don't have second hard drives lying around.
Right. Yeah. So that means all of us are going to be going out and buying FireWire drives. Or for our mothers, we say, here, you need this. I don't want to have to tell you why. Just I'm going to plug it in and but I don't worry about it.
I think that's actually one of the things that's important, though, is the fact that you can plug it in. I mean, this is part of what when Apple does something, you could plug it in for your parents and you could tell them, don't worry about it again. And it just kind of runs in the background, does the
thing like
it needs
that.
To do.
Because I did kind of that for my mom, but I never really was able to get it, you know, to be as automatic as I'd like it to be. So, yeah, all right. That makes sense.
I mean, the the two things that I'm most concerned about, I mean, I'm really excited about it, but I think that the number one is we work with large files. I mean, as you know, with MacBreak and other things that, you know, we deal with single files that are 200 gigabytes at a time. And and even if you're not working with files that big, if I shoot all raw, for instance, and I probably shoot a gigabyte or 2 gigabytes every couple days.
Man, you're going to have a big extra hard drive.
Well, that's what I'm, you know, how do I deal with that? And maybe how do I what I haven't seen so far with Time Machine is how we can distinguish folders and say these folders aren't going to be counted or they're only going to be done every so often or whatever. The second thing, is, of course, is security. If I want to delete something and make sure that it's really gone, what kind of controls am I going to have to make that happen?
Now, Amber, you mentioned virtual desktops, which I like a lot. I mean, to me, it's an easy way to work. Do you use virtual desktops on Windows or on Linux or anywhere else?
You know, I don't use Windows too much anymore at all, Leo, to be quite honest. And I've used it before, and I think that it'll be a great thing to have on my Mac because I'm using the laptop a lot, and I think anything that really helps me manage my time between different applications will be great. And the idea that I can go from one app to another and just kind of drag and drop, that's one thing that I'm definitely excited about. And, you know, funny enough, and I'm embarrassed to say, the other thing that I was most excited about was the new voice, Alex.
That's very human-like. Finally got rid of Bubbles and Victoria and those lame voices. Oh, God.
I know. It's silly. And that was just, you know, one of the things that I've read up about a lot that people keep mentioning. So those are the type of, you know, little features I think, you know, that will, you know, kind of make a difference and impact just the average user.
I'll use Spaces a lot. Virtual desktop. I use it on Linux, and it's really a great way to, unless you have a 30, of course, you guys probably have 30-inch screens, but for me, it's a really nice way to get more real estate.
I actually have one of the 30-inch screen laptops. It's a pain to carry around.
Oh, you're so lucky, David.
Now, they dropped the price on the 30-inch to $19.99. Still a lot of my range, but I guess if you wanted a lot of space, that's a good deal. Okay, now, maybe more to the point, I mean, I think I agree with you, David, that Time Machine is going to be important for end users. I think something that is going to make a big difference is core animation.
Yeah.
Alex, you probably know a little more about this than others since you deal with these kinds of technologies all the time. What do you think about that?
It's going to be really exciting, and I have to admit that I don't know enough about it yet, other than what they really showed there. But the main thing is that if you look at what's happened with core audio or core video, what you're seeing is Apple, you know, putting something into the operating system where a developer doesn't have to do all the work. I mean, a lot of the stuff, go get, you know, instead of having to write something that builds all the interfaces with a camera or works with a lot of the elements that you would normally do with video, Core Video does that all for you. You can simply say, go get that for me and bring it over, and then I can use that as an object. In the same way, you know, Apple's doing a lot of this for animation. So what we're able to do, from what I understand, from what I've seen so far, is that, you know, as a developer, you're going to be able to do a lot of fun animation type pieces within your applications, and you're going to be able to cut the amount of code writing that you have to do. You can just tell, I want a keyframe from here to here, rather than building all the entire class that would be required to do that on your own. That's my understanding of what I've seen. What it means for us as users is that we're going to see apps that do a lot of really cool things and very useful things in the not too distant future when people start accessing these, because it not only means that there's less code to write, but it's easier for a programmer that doesn't know as much about animation to start adding those features to their software.
Yeah, but how much of that have you seen in Core Video? I mean, that was a big thing they did last year, and they had Phil up there, and he was like, "Oh, look at this picture of a tiger, and I'm gonna twist it and turn it." And I haven't seen any tools like that for kind of the common Joe. So Core Audio is well represented in GarageBand, but where are we seeing Core Video on sort of a user level?
I have to say I agree a little bit because, for instance, the Quartz Composer, which is an amazing thing, is underutilized by developers even.
Well, I do think people are taking some time to get some of that stuff up. I know we've done some early development in both Core Audio and Core Video. And especially with Core Audio, what I was amazed at, we were working on actually, I mean, we're in process on something that would allow you, for instance, to record a whole lot of audio tracks at one time for something like a podcast, for instance. And the fact that we didn't have to write all that stuff, we didn't have to write all the filters, we didn't have to write a lot of the pieces that we would normally have to write, it was literally turn all this stuff on in Core Audio and make it go, allowed us to be you know, working with something that we could start testing within, you know, literally a couple of days after we started talking about it.
Hey, conspiracy theory time, but this core came before the Intel move. Do you think they knew? Is it just a coincidence? Because the core chip, right?
Well, I don't think that the core. I mean, I think that the core audio and core video
animation. That happened That happened to Tiger or pre-Tiger. Anyway, it happened pre-Intel. Anyway, who knows?
Yeah,
I don't know.
But
I mean, it's nice that this is all built into the OS. I think that's important.
Yeah.
What other features of the Leopard, the new spotted version of OS X? There's some new stuff in the mail. Yeah, RSS integration. Is that what we're seeing?
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff here and there. I think another big one is the iChat changes. I mean, this is the kind of thing where they make these changes that are they just make a change and leave you to sort out the possibilities. Like this thing about the green screen. Like they can turn you can put any photo or movie behind you when you're doing a video chat.
Pretty cool.
iChat, I don't know how they do that. Something to do with separating you from your background via proximity or something, like the part of you focus.
I can actually, if you don't mind, what they're doing is what's called a difference mat. So what they're looking for is that they take the background and they are, if you step, the reason they have you step out of it is it takes an image.
So that's how it works. So you start without you, and then you go in, and it knows what the difference is.
Yeah, if you notice on the keynote, he steps out and steps back in, and then what it's doing is saying, okay, which pixels have changed, right, between what I saw really before and after. And it's a very old, you know, computer graphics trick, it's great that it's done in such a easy way to, you know.
So now, Amber, when you and I chat, you won't know that I'm in my... Oh, no, you will know I'm in my jammies, but you'll think I'm actually in the Taj Mahal in my jammies. So we have to work a way to change the jammy part.
Well, the key is taking a photo of your bedroom so that you can go on vacation and tell your boss that you're sick and, you know,
I'm sick. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a great
idea. But also the screen sharing stuff is really cool. So you can demonstrate to somebody on the other end, you know, a document, a movie, or what you're working on your Mac. They can see what you're doing.
Does anybody use, I mean, I'm just thinking back again to the four-way video conferencing that they introduced in Tiger. Does anybody use that? Or, I mean, every time I've tried it, it takes so much bandwidth, you can't do it. Sometimes I think they put in these features and they're not really practicable.
I've used it when in a couple locations where we're doing intranet stuff, not
right.
The internet stuff, it's really hard to get enough bandwidth to make the four-way work. But David, I actually have a question for you about the controlling the screen, because that's the part I didn't see as much of. Are you playing a movie on their side and then giving them feedback, or is it trying to stream the movie over?
I can play a movie and you get to watch it.
Okay.
Let's see. So what else? Oh, there's task lists, to-do lists. I may end up using that more than any of these other fancy Dan features, right? Sometimes you don't know what you're going to use.
Well, go back to iChat for a second. Because okay, one thing they didn't talk about that is going to be possible in here is you're going to be able to control another person's desktop, or the two of you can collaborate over a desktop. So you've got remote desktop built into iChat now, which could be incredibly helpful if you're troubleshooting somebody else's Mac who isn't quite sure what they're doing. Again, back to mom. She and I can set up a chat, and she says, oh, I've lost this, you know, because she shoved it in the wrong folder. I can then control her desktop and say, oh, here it is. See, no, don't. That's Uncle Bud's pictures. Don't put it in there. These are your pictures. Put them over here.
I use Apple Remote Desktop almost daily, and it's just such a useful, I mean, it's hard to imagine at this point without having it. So having it be able to at least be available one-to-one, I think is very, very useful.
Yeah, in such a friendly way as well. Yeah. That, you know, mom and I are accustomed to chatting each other visually, but remote desktop would be sort of,
That's a really good idea. A really good idea.
Do you guys think that, what do you think of this whole Apple, Microsoft, you know, Leopard, Vista comparison thing?
Why are they doing that?
Why do they bother? It strikes me as so irrelevant.
It makes you look like a weenie. It does. It's like, you know, we're better than you are, huh? And it makes me think they're weak.
But it makes no sense to me. Like, two things about it. Number one is they say, oh, Apple has done 5 versions of Mac OS X in the time it took Microsoft to do 1 version of Windows. But, like, is that necessarily a good thing? That's $650 you've paid for 5 years just to keep current. And secondly, you know, let's get over it. Windows is corporate America. That is the market share. That's the 90%. These guys buy 500 or 1,000 copies at a time. Doesn't matter how much better the Mac is or Linux. It will never change, and it makes absolutely no difference to these guys who buy the bulk copies and make up the market share. So for everybody to have this fantasy that it's somehow, you know, a race or an even pitted pair of warriors, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's not even close, really, in reality. Although Apple's gaining market share.
But they're gaining market share in the cracks. That's individuals and small businesses, right. These tiny, penny-ante, one or two copy people who can make their own purchasing decisions. But the corporations do not. When you are hired by Smith Barney, you sit down at a desk, they give you, and it's already administered. So you don't get to choose. So that's what I'm saying, is that the market share thing, it can never sway more than a few tiny percent, the scraps of those small numbers of people who can make their own choices.
Should we care? I mean, do we really care whether Apple is a 3% or a 10% or a 20% of the market?
I don't think so. I think the philosophies between Microsoft and Apple are very different. What they do, these operating systems are very different. And both companies are thriving and profitable, and they're each serving their own niche. I mean, I think most of us can agree that Apple does the most innovation in operating systems. Microsoft then sees what they like of that and implements it in the next version. But so what? Apple also steals from Microsoft. Anyway, but my point is they both have a niche. You know, they both have strengths and a following, and it's just not the race that we really care about.
Well, how much of that do you think is Steve Jobs throwing meat to the audience? You know, the people in the room who go, "Yeah, you're right, Steve," because it doesn't seem to translate too much to the mainstream press. They pick it up a little bit, but generally they tend to focus on whatever the features are of the new products and put that stuff aside.
You know, Chris, it's funny you should mention that, because once a year I get to interview Steve Jobs at the Macworld Expo. And I had just written a blog entry about how many features of Windows Vista, which had been announced the day before at CES, were from Mac OS X, right?
Right.
And so I was halfway through a sentence about asking him his feelings on that, and he went into like a Steve Jobs tirade at me, saying, "What's the matter with you effing media people, that you don't hold their feet to the fire, you let them get away with murder, you let them get off scot-free, blah, 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 blah." And I'm like, "Dude, I'm the one who just wrote about it." And he goes, "In your blog? Nobody reads your blog."
You know, I think really that reflects maybe why this marketing campaign is that Steve is feeling, he's got a little chip on his shoulder, he's feeling a little second best to Windows, to Microsoft. I don't think he should.
I can tell you he's super pissed at them. That he's super pissed about how many of these good Apple ideas made their way into Vista. And, you know, I don't blame him.
Well, but as you pointed out, you can't be pissed about that. Look at their borrowing System Restore now. I mean, cross-pollination is good for end users, right?
Right.
So we're all happy. Photo Booth, which was not much heralded when it came out. In fact, I think it came out in kind of in between operating system releases on the iMac with the camera. My kids love it. It's one of the coolest applications. It's a really fun way to show core video off. And sometimes, you know, it may be iChat that blows everybody away. Sometimes it's an unexpected thing that people get excited about.
Oh, man, Photo Booth is just so awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's my kids, when they have play dates, they gather around this thing for hours.
Yep.
I think we have over 12,000 saved snapshots.
Yes.
And then their parents come and pick them up and go, "What is that?" And then they sit there and make themselves look sad and skinny.
It's kind of the stealth application on... I don't know why Apple doesn't promote it a little bit more, because it's frankly maybe the coolest thing on a Macintosh. I hate to say that. Front Row, the same thing. I think Front Row, when you show people Front Row and compare it to Windows Media Center, people go, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty nice. Wow.
Yeah, and then they spend 20 minutes with it and go, oh, that's pretty limited.
It doesn't do much.
Yeah, it doesn't do much. It looks good, though.
That is something I'd like to see in Leopard and the new hardware is maybe a TV tuner and recording capabilities. That's really all that's missing at this point, I think.
Yeah, and to get the whole sharing media idea is wonderful.
I love that.
I can have but it doesn't work.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, it works poorly. So
what doesn't work? Does it not play back well? Or
well, what it needs is a really, really fat pipe to do it. So right. If you're trying to do it over AirPort, yes, maybe you can do it over a strong AirPort connection and get like something you purchase from the iTunes Music Store. But if you've got a full-length movie, forget it.
I'm a gigabit Ethernet fan now.
Yeah, man. You have to be gigabit Ethernet.
Yeah.
And then you do it by alias. You know, alias it to your... over the network
Jennifer
rather
Garner?
Than do it through it.
I love her.
You can send her over your network, Leo.
Wow,
it's perfectly fine.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. Now
it's only
excited.
It's only legal in Canada, though. You have to come here.
Yeah, because you guys pay a license fee for copying Jennifer Garner all your blank media.
We can't get any TV shows or anything here on iTunes, so that's definitely not true.
That of course, some of the announcements were new TV shows. So you in Canada, you don't get any of those TV shows at all?
No, we don't get any of those TV shows at all. There's really nothing as far as the iTunes Music Store and the store in general. There's no real video content that's worth buying. We just don't have any of the television shows, and it's just not there yet. And well, that's a huge disappointment.
Don't you get a break on Gordon Lightfoot recordings or something?
Anne Murray. All the Anne Murray you can download.
Easy there. Easy, easy. We have good Canadian music, and I have to say there's great Canadian music. But, you know, Anne Murray's good, too.
So now do you think that this is really just the movie companies or sometimes I think maybe Apple isn't trying as hard as they might to get into these other markets. They're just kind of saying, well, you know, we want to get in the U.S. market. We'll worry about the other European and Canadian and markets later.
Yeah, I think that's just part of it. I mean, it's a small market. You know, we're a huge country, but if you think about it, it's just
30
over 30 million people,
yeah,
right? So it's just a little bit delayed, and then the laws are so different in different countries, and so they, you know, tend to tackle the U.S. first, and then we get stuff a little bit later. But hopefully down the road that it will happen and we will get some TV shows. But I think it will be a while.
Let's talk about the hardware, because, of course, there is a new computer, the Mac Pro. Not really a surprise to anybody. It's using the Woodcrest chip. That's a little bit of a surprise. I was kind of hoping to see a Core 2 chip in this guy, not a Core, although the Woodcrest is a very powerful, it's really a Xeon. Any thoughts from anybody about the Mac Pro?
Well, I'm pretty excited. It's amazing.
Did you order one?
I'm going to order one soon.
I've been able to hold off. You know, the only thing that attracts me, because I have a dual G5, the only thing that attracts me is that it's quieter. I don't know if you can hear my Gear 5 humming in the background, but it's a hot day and it's loud.
Yeah. Well, what I noticed when I saw it open was really, you know, what you can do when you don't have an enormous amount of cooling elements, you know, for a handful of chips.
Well, they've got four drive bays in there, right?
Right. The ability to put in it's four PCI Express card. I believe
video cards.
There's
yeah.
four slots there for your video cards, which I'm not sure whether one of the things that we're going to be testing soon is whether, at least on the Windows side on a Intel tower, whether we can do SLI, which is of course stacking. Of course, you know, we're a little geeky on the graphics stuff.
The highest card that they're selling is the Quadro,
the 4500.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Which is a very very good card.
Is it?
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the high end of what, not the high end, but very close to the high end of what NVIDIA produces, and a very, 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 very powerful card. So,
David, are you excited about the new hardware?
Oh, did you say something?
Yeah, that was kind of my reaction. I was hoping for more, maybe.
You know, I was like talking to my editor about whether I should review it for the Times, and like. What would I say? You know, it looks the same. It's faster. Yay. You know, is it fast enough to run Photoshop now? I mean, none of the other Intel Macs are.
Right. Microsoft did announce, by the way, that they're going to do Office soon, right, for the Intel, a universal Office. They're rewriting the whole thing.
Yeah, they're not saying when, but that is good news, although it's news we had back in January.
Right. Oh, we knew this already?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's not like we're seeing a huge performance hit on this. I mean, it runs perfectly fine at Rosetta anyway.
Yeah, Office is fine.
Yeah, I mean, so how fast do you need
it's really Photoshop is the thing that everybody needs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Leo, I have a question for you, since, of course, Leopard begins with Leo.
Oh, it does. This is my operating system. I'm going to change my name from Leo Laporte to Leo Leopard. No, that's not good.
Dude, you should write a book, and then, you know, that could be your slogan. Leopard begins with Leo. I mean, you've got...
Oh, you're right.
You've got a bumper sticker waiting to happen.
This is it, right? Because next is going to be some other cat, and I'll be out of luck. Do we know what the next cat is?
Ocelot.
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
It could be. There's some Norwegian guy named Os who's getting very excited right now. So you got to be careful. Ocelot begins with Os.
But I do have a question for you, Leo. Why don't you explain to the people about Leopard being 64-bit? Explain exactly what that means.
Well, this is kind of a surprise to me, because I always thought everything was 64-bit. You know, the PowerPC chips, the G5 and the G4, are 64-bit chips. In fact, I was a little shocked that they went to Intel chips, which were 32-bit, but now the Xeon is a full 64-bit chip. In fact, it's really used in servers. I mean, there's a Dell ProLiant server that uses this Woodcrest chip. There's a SGI is going to use this. It's not a desktop chip. It's considered a server chip. 64-bit is of mixed blessing. For content creators, people like you, Alex, you might get a big benefit out of it because you operate on big chunks of data. But because your pointers are bigger, because you're operating in bigger chunks, a lot of operations are, in fact, not faster. It might even be slower. So I've never been a big, you know, we got to go 64-bit kind of guy.
And on our end, we all believe that we do have to go 64-bit only.
Yeah, because of what you do.
The big pipes and being able to address a lot more memory. I mean, the I think that the towers are really... they really are moving towards being true workstations. I mean, there was a point, there was this kind of lag for Apple and a lot of other companies where the laptops and the towers were within a ballpark of each other, except for being able to add cards. As you start to look at where these new Intel towers are going, 16 gigs of RAM, being able to add multiple graphics cards, being able to add 2 terabytes of
that's your
storage.
Advantage, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's going to make a big difference. Like, the thing is that, and a lot of this will remain to be seen. I can say something because I haven't seen anything, which is that, we're really looking forward to whenever Final Cut Pro Studio comes out, and the curiosity, of course, will be how much will they take advantage of being able to have a ton of RAM, being able to have really, really big video cards built in, because when you look at a program like Motion, which by all reports you're going to see a lot more of the motion functionality.
That's where you get the value.
Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, that's where you get the value. But a word processor, most of the stuff most people do, surfing, email, it could even be slower, frankly.
But yeah, and truly at this point, you really could do all of that on a laptop. I mean, there's not really any good reason. I mean, these
I don't think anybody should
really
buy a Pro who isn't in fact doing Pro content creation at this point.
I would agree.
That's basically a server.
Right.
That's what surprised me, frankly. I would, there's actually room now in the line for a mid-range desktop. Maybe they don't do it, but that does the Core 2, that is more of a desktop device and less of a kind of massive server device.
But I think when you look at the Mini and the iMac, those are really...
Powerful
computers for what they, for what they are.
Anybody disappointed that you didn't see Conroe and Merrim, the Core 2 chips announced? That, I mean, there's nothing there. And that puts Apple kind of squarely behind the big PC box manufacturers who are all doing Core 2 chips boxes. I thought for
sure.
Well,
it just means that they can come up with the, Mac Pro 2 in 4 months or whatever.
Right. So, Amber, you missed it, but David gave a big yawn when we started talking about the hardware.
I would agree with you. I had kind of a big yawn as well when I saw the news about the hardware. Yeah,
well,
it was definitely a little bit disappointing.
I mean, the speed is welcome. I mean, that is great. That is the big deal, right? It's a lot faster.
I guess, particularly for people like Alex.
For me, it was really more the extensibility. I mean, the limit. There's been a lot of limitations to being able to how much RAM we can put in them, how many cards. You know, those are things that for us is really important, and stuff that, to be honest with you, the G5 just there wasn't enough there. You know, and
gotcha.
You wanted to almost do custom PC versions, PCs,
even the quad, huh?
The quad, and I have, I work on a quad all day, and there was all kinds of mixing and matching cards, where you put the cards. There's not enough slots for them. They're not the right types of slots. And so this one really, you know, because we're going to, you know, have a decked out one pretty soon. I mean, 16, you know, with the whole 16 gigs, probably at least one 4,500 in there, if not a couple, if we can get the tests working. And for us, when we're, as I said, we're working in motion or working in something that really, or, you know, a bigger 3D app, that's going to make a big difference. It's the extensibility for me more, because the speed, I think, was only a modest bump. I mean, we're only, it's a 1.5 to 2X.
Right. Well, that's because the quad was so fast. I mean,
right.
That was a very fast box. So it's really not about speed, you're saying. It's about extensibility.
For me, that's what I'm most excited about is finally a computer that we can really, you know, extend it, which makes it a workstation. If I can't extend it well, I might as well just be using a laptop.
Right. Mm-hmm. Any other stories that caught people's eyes? Any other news in the Apple world that you think we should talk about?
Well, the Parallels announcement is pretty cool.
There's a new version of Parallels or a beta version?
Yeah, it's beta version. And it brings us a lot closer to pure heaven on an Intel Mac. That is, Parallels is already very cool, this $80 program that lets you run Windows XP in a window on an Intel Mac without having to restart. Ugh. You can copy and paste between them. They see each other's files. It's just totally great.
So what's new in the new beta?
Well, the thing is, it's really, really fast. It's like 90% as fast as an actual PC. That's not fast enough for 3D games. So they're working on 3D acceleration, so you'll have the games. They say they have fixed the problem that stops people like Leo and me from running naturally speaking in Parallels. Actually, what I had written about is how well this speech dictation program works under boot camp.
I used it in Parallels, and it seemed like it worked. What is the
problem? Really?
Yeah.
I wasn't able to get it to work. I would, like, for example, take the training part, and it would just, every 50th word, it would just choke and not hear what I was saying, and I never did get it to actually dictate more than a half a sentence at a time.
And you had 2 gigs of RAM?
Yeah. Huh. It was on a MacBook Pro. But they say they've got all that ironed out.
It's purely a performance issue, then.
I think it was a USB channeling issue.
Because I trained it, but I didn't use a USB mic, so maybe that's why.
Oh, maybe that is why. I was using a USB
mic. Yeah.
But and they also say that they've got it working out so that you can have you can install Windows Vista on it.
Oh, that's good news.
And, of course, the beauty of Parallels is that the entire thing is one file on your hard drive, icon.
Yeah.
And so what people are saying is duplicate that or back that up. And then if you ever get viruses or spyware or whatever, who cares? Throw away that file, reinstate the one you made before the infection, and you're golden. Or you can run XP in one window and Windows Vista in another window. Or you can have multiple Windows XPs all in different windows. Or Linux or Solaris or OS2, whatever you want, all in different windows.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Calm down, dude. No, that's exciting.
But not Mac Classic.
No matter what, no Mac Classic.
No Mac Classic. You know, but I'm surprised that Apple has sort of ceded this territory to Parallels with when they talked about boot camp. It sounds like the same thing, that you're going to have to reboot to get into Windows and go back to the Mac OS, which just seems really clumsy.
And that's
to me.
What's so great about Parallels. You run them both at the same time. Of course, you need a lot of memory.
Yeah, exactly. But why give that to Parallels? Why didn't Apple come up with something?
It's interesting. Everybody thought that they might announce that kind of virtualization in Leopard. They may still yet, but they didn't say anything about it at the keynote.
Well in fact, Phil Schiller has said emphatically no.
They're just not
going to go there.
I wonder why.
And I think the reason is that Parallels involves a lot more kludging and working around and custom coding and all that. Boot camp, I'm under the impression, it turns your Mac into a genuine PC. It's actually running Windows.
Yeah.
And you know Steve Jobs, he doesn't like imperfect solutions. That's why they will never release a tiny, tiny laptop that requires an external DVD player. Right? He just hates that concept. He wants the perfect all-in-one solution with no compromises.
Well, there are other choices. VMware has announced it's going to do a Macintosh virtualization solution. And of course, it's really the king of this category on other platforms. They're really a good company, and I'd be very interested to see what they do. They're going into beta soon. And Transgaming announced something called Cider. Have you seen this? It's designed to let you play Windows games inside of OS X. It's not like Parallels. It's not a separate kind of operating system. You actually play the Windows game in OS X.
Wow.
Apparently, nobody heard about that.
I wish I had time to play games. It's cool.
it's based on Wine. So what it's doing is it's emulating Windows calls without actually putting Windows on your hard drive. If Steve doesn't like Parallels, he's gonna hate Cider.
Well, I think that seems to be the end direction here, is to get to a point where you're just opening Windows applications in OS 10.
Yeah, who needs Windows, really, right? Wine, of course, has announced that the Codeweavers, people who do Wine, which is the emulation layer for Linux, doesn't have any Windows. It just emulates Windows calls, so a program thinks it's running inside Windows when it's not. They've said that they will also be doing an OS 10 version.
Oh, that is so cool.
So there are going to be a lot of ways that you can get the Windows programs running on the Mac. Relative to our earlier conversation about market share, don't you think that's the kind of thing that could make a difference in market share?
Well, as we know, it's sort of a mixed blessing. Chris Breen and I were just talking about this. You know, it could attract a lot of people to the Mac. You know, all these switchers who don't want to go cold turkey, who want to keep their old Windows program around, or people who need one Windows program that's not available for the Mac. That's all a big win. The big question is this going to make software companies less likely to do Mac versions?
Right.
Because they say, well, why should we bother? You can just open up our Windows version right on the Mac.
That was the fear that Photoshop wouldn't bother doing anymore. But I can't imagine Photoshop not having a Mac native version. I mean,
not for a while, no.
Yeah, especially with all the designers using it, there's no way that...
Yeah. No designer wants to run Windows just so he can run Photoshop.
Right, and they've got deep pockets, so they can afford to do this.
Well,
but
that's
let's
the point.
Talk about
right.
some of the smaller right. developers right. who say, oh, gee, I'm on a budget, I can't do this. Get Windows, put it on your Mac, and do it.
The argument against that scenario was that everybody who wants to run one of these Windows programs has to have not only an Intel-based Mac, but has to buy and install a copy of Windows, which is, you know, $150 expenditure that Adobe and whoever can't assume everybody has made. But now that you're talking about these systems that do not require a copy of Windows, that just run Windows and trick them, well, then that argument about people not doing Mac versions becomes a little scarier.
Good point. Well, it's been a really an interesting week. Not as interesting as it could have been had we had an iPod phone or a new giant screen video iPod. Are we ever going to get any of those?
I think that the phone thing is one of the least plausible ones. I know people who worked for Palm on the Trio project, and their lives were a living hell trying to get this thing through. And the reason is the people who hold the power are the cell phone carriers, Singular, Verizon, etc. The person making the phone has so little say.
Right.
Verizon will say, we're not going to stock your phone unless you do the menus like this.
Right.
And I just cannot imagine Steve Jobs putting up with that, or any of these guys putting up with that at Apple.
But Amber wants one.
I would like to have one. I'd also like to have a new iPod Video that really had a bigger screen. I think, you know, I've been playing with iPod Video for a while now, and I just think the screen is way too small, and it's not a good viewing experience at all. And so hopefully, you know, we'll see them maybe flip the iPod and go horizontal with it.
Wait till September, October, you'll see.
That does seem likely, yeah. What, do you say that, Mr. Secrets of the iPod, with any inside knowledge? Or just...
None at all, but it's just the cycle of how they do things with iPod.
It's been about a year at that time. It'll be a year.
Yeah, and the Christmas season is coming up, so they need to announce something hot for September, October. They will. It'll be under everybody's tree, and they'll make a ton of money.
My daughter lost her iPod Video, and I said, well, honey, don't worry, because the new iPod will be out soon.
It's true. I actually like those MyView glasses I was testing out on Call for Help a while ago, Leo, that hooked up to the iPod
Video.
She's
got head-mounted display. This is very geeky stuff.
I tried that out. How did that? Did your cerebellum pop out of your head or what?
I actually think it's great. I mean, it just, you know, it feels a little bit more like you're watching TV. The only thing is, you look like you're straight out of Star Trek. So you kind of have to compromise what's more important: watching what's on your iPod Video or
looking,
you know,
like shorty,
looking kind of silly.
You're not like walking down the street with this thing on or driving.
No, but you could, though. You could walk down the street because you have your peripheral vision, so you're able to still walk while you're watching video off your iPod. So it's about $269, I think, for the glasses. So, it's kind of an interesting way to watch video.
All the kids will be wearing them.
Now, did you get any kind of headache, or did you get, how long did you watch it?
I didn't watch it for too long, but what I really want to test it on is when I go on a long flight somewhere. So to be able to fly and use them. And I don't anticipate getting a headache. I think it should be okay. I mean, anything's better than cranking your neck down and trying to watch a 2-inch screen on your iPod. So, right.
Not to mention the wrist ache holding that thing up for 3 hours.
It gets heavy, Leo.
My experiences have been actually just the opposite. I've tried those glasses and they're really annoying to me for extended wear. And on the other hand, I did a little math, and if you can compare the 2-inch screen of the iPod, you know, 18 inches from your face, and compare that with the amount of your field of view that a 42-inch plasma across the room fills, it's pretty comparable.
Really?
So I mean, yes, it's a small screen, but it's also much closer to your face. So I actually find it pretty immersive.
But don't you still get tired holding it 18 inches from your face? Come on.
No. I would not hold it. In fact, what I generally do is what I've, of course, almost anybody would do. I remove my loafer and I put it on the tray table in front of me. It works beautifully.
You put it in the heel? Is that it? So it's resting in the heel?
You put it in the heel, and only the screen peeks over the top of the opening.
And you look like a complete crazy person.
Oh, it's a conversation starter.
So are the MyView glasses. So
That's true.
We should
get
fly together sometime.
Yeah. You with your 30-inch PowerBook and your loafer TV stand, and Amber with her data glasses. I ask you, who's the first person you wouldn't talk to? And on that note, I think we better wrap this thing up. This is our first episode of Mac Break Weekly, and not our last. We hope we can do this every week. And boy, I'm really glad we could get some of the best people in the business to start things off with such a bang. David Pogue, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'll look for you in the New York Times and, of course, your blog online, which Steve apparently reads, even though he, you know, belittles it. Maybe he has people who read it for him.
Exactly.
Like that. Chris Breen, any new books coming out?
I'm working on the updates to the iPod books, but still waiting to see what Apple does in the next month or two.
Notice I didn't ask David that because we wouldn't have time, as he gave us the list of new books coming out. you sold the missing manuals, didn't you, to somebody, to O'Reilly?
I did, but I'm still obligated to do 5 books a year.
Oh, my God.
All by myself.
Oh, my God.
And I have to tell you, I am so glad that Apple delayed, or not delayed, but Apple is taking the advantage of its escape clause for the Leopard release date. They had said the end of 2006 or early 2007, and I'm already deep into this Windows Vista book, 900 pages. And I was looking at, like, the end of my life when I considered doing them both at once.
So they're saying the spring 2007 now. Actually, yeah. A couple of months after Vista. So, you can have some time off. I think we're going on a Mac Mania cruise in the fall, so.
Yeah, that'll be a blast.
Mac Mania 5 to the Western Caribbean. Chris, are you going on that, or did you get out?
I'm not. I did the Mediterranean with David, and
how was that? You guys went on the Mediterranean one?
Yeah. Oh.
Dude, it was unbelievable. Spain, Italy, Monaco, France, and Tunisia, Africa.
I'm so jealous. I really wanted to go on that one, but I've already gone on 3 geek cruises this year, so I really had to draw the line somewhere. I'm going on the chess cruise in a couple of weeks to Alaska, and then we'll do Mac Mania 5. I'm looking forward to that. Amber MacArthur, we look forward to seeing you on Command N, Torrent, Call for Help, and Inside the Net on the twit.tv network. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Don't tell David we're working on a book, because you know how he is.
We won't say a word.
Shh. It's...
And I'm glad you didn't post about it on your blog, Leo. Shh.
Oh, whoops. I was so excited, David, because we're using Subversion. I thought this is really wacky, which is a versioning system, you know, like programmers use to keep track of versions. Because we're collaborating together on the book, we're going to use Subversion to keep track of version changes and so forth. This will be very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're so technical.
So hip.
Yeah. I'm in terminal right now trying to set it up, Leo, so I need you after this.
I'll give you the commands in a moment. And of course, Alex Lindsay, who is keeping very busy at Pixel Core with all of your projects, including Mac Break the Video Show. We just posted one on Monday.
Automator.
Oh, we got a new one coming out from Sal.
It's a new one from Sal on Automator using your phone for uploading stuff.
Oh, that's cool. When will that be?
It's up. It should be up now.
Oh, all right. Because the last one I saw was August 7th, which was a couple of days ago, DV Matt Blast. So we'll, by the time you hear this, Sal Segoyan will be gracing the top of twit.tv with a new Mac break. And, of course, you've got This Week in Media and many other adventures, pixelcore.com. Anybody else want any other plugs? This is your chance.
Oh, iLifeZone.
iLifeZone. .com?
No. Yeah, is it? Well, it's a, it is. iLifeZone is a, is another podcast. And
You guys do this other podcast.
Yeah, it's a, it's another Pixel Core production with Scott Bourne and...
Yeah, Scott Bourne and Derek Story, and it's really, really good.
I forgot all about that.
Listening to it. I was sitting there helping to engineer some of the stuff, and I've been helping with some of that stuff, and we're going to be recording here again.
You know, between the five of us, we must be doing like 39 blogs and podcasts. I think
that's kind of out of control.
The inevitable end result of this is that 5 years from now, there will be one reader for every blog.
Yeah, that's what I've been hoping for, a one-to-one correspondence between podcasters and podcastees. Do you have a podcast, David?
I do. You know, it's a funny story. My wife did not read my New York Times columns, which is the subject of some friction in the relationship. And she claimed it was because she didn't have time. And I'm like, but Jennifer, you read all these books every year. And she goes, I don't read. I listen to them. They're books on disc. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'm going to record my column and put it in your iTunes to make you listen to them. And she's like, well, I'd love that. In fact, why don't you offer that to the Times? But there's lots of people. And so it was like a great idea. So now I read my column every Thursday. It's on iTunes.
Podcasting, baby. It's happening.
I know.
But you're right. We are doing too many podcasts now. Nobody can listen to them all. That is an issue we're going to have to address at some point. All right, gang. Hey, thank you so much. We'll see you next week for another Mac Break Weekly.